know I'm a goofball, but someone has to be. So here's the first question is, give me all the, I was born a small child and blah, 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 blah. You know, the little Terry Nunn biography vignette.
How much stuff do you want?
A short version.
Starting from where?
Wherever you want to.
Wow. Okay, I grew up in Southern California, all around Los Angeles, basically. I started music in a band at 16. I met Berlin, John Crawford, who had Berlin going at that point, at 18. And the rest is history.
Wow.
I was an actor in my teens until I met John. And what forced me to look for a band finally was getting an offer for a show called Dallas. There was a teenage role that Charlene Tilton eventually took, and I was offered that role along with a 7-year contract, and that was the moment for me where I decided, okay, I'm either going to try and be a musician, which I've always wanted to be and I'm terrified of being, or I'm going to be an actor, and this is the moment that's going to decide my life.
I can see the Charlene Tilton thing, but it's interesting. No, looking at you, but you know what's interesting? So you were up for it, but then they cast her. So did they cast someone who looks like you? I mean, that's right.
I don't know, but I turned it down, and I gave myself a year to find a band and make something happen.
So any regrets?
A year.
Any regrets of not being on Dallas? God, you mean you could have gone out with Larry What's-His-Face and, you know, been one of his dates? And
I'd probably be richer, but not as happy.
You know how many people I talk to? I mean, I think about that every day of my life. Yeah, I could have been richer thing, you know, if you take other roads, but I don't think that works.
No, it's not about money. I've gotten that over the years. Because money comes and goes. It's about
Boy, does it. Passion is the defining word for me. You can ask my wife that. She's like, the first time she's like, well, you know, we'll meet friends and like, what is Dennis doing? It's like, well, whatever he does, he is so full throttle about it, it's just disgusting.
What does she do?
You ready for this? An organizational management consultant for Levi Strauss. She's working on worldwide software. It's real technical. She's so opposite of me. I mean, I'm the creative boy. And it's like, you'd never think the two of us would meet. And I met her down here, actually. I was down here for a shoot and I met her. And this will all go on paper. We'll edit it out. And she broke up with me 3 times and I was totally the wrong guy because she had the dark-haired, non-bald Catholic guy. You know, the good-looking guy on her mind, because that's who she dated, and I kept making her, I think I made her 25 mixtapes, and finally one day I walked away, and a month later she called me up crying and said, I miss you. Lesson for every Jewish bald guy in the world who wants an attractive woman, go away. And show them you're really serious. So, it's worked. Okay, I'm going to go for
my first husband was a Jewish New Yorker.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, we're funny.
We were
okay.
Together 7 years.
Really? We're goofy, but
he's a good guy.
So let's start with today.
Okay.
We'll work, because everybody probably wants to talk about the, you know, all the past stuff.
Okay.
And I'll get there.
Okay.
But let's talk about Voyeur. Departure or another step on the same journey?
Another step on the same journey.
Wow, good answer. Good answer. You're supposed to, come on, Terry, you're supposed to say, supposed to say, it's a major departure from everything I've ever done. I thought about this deeply, and that's what you said. Come on.
But it's not.
Good.
No, it's not. It's
success begets success, right?
Well, for me, electronic music now has so many more toys than the last Berlin record, which was 16 years ago. And the live experience actually brought me back into doing Berlin because I saw Garbage and Sneaker Pimps, and these bands were doing things live that weren't possible 10 years ago.
Indeed.
We couldn't recreate on stage what we did in the studio. There was no way to do it. Now, it's another world. And so in the studio as well, electronic music from when I started doing it, when it just started, we had one synthesizer, it's a big playground now. And this is, for us, an extension.
But does that scare you? I say this because of your voice and because of your talent. So now I get to ask you, does it scare you that with all these electronic gizmos, someone with lesser talent can just sound friggin' incredible? Does that scare you at all? That wasn't one of my questions.
No, because it's not the same kind of talent. I appreciate, thank you for your compliment. But now it's not just about having a good voice. It used to be.
Right.
Because there was only bass, drums, guitar, and vocals. And how many different things are you going to do with the guitar? It's going to sound exactly like it sounds. So the voice has to hold up. But now, with like you get so much into remixes, mm-hmm. and rap just keeps recycling old music and adding lyrics to it. It's collages now.
So you like that stuff. It's not a,
it's
not it's a negative
creative.
Thing. Excellent. Because so many people are so ready to just say, oh, come on, that's crap, and there's no, and I don't think so.
But it's a different kind of creativity, and it's just as valid.
Yeah. Good for you. Now, you've got a good good attitude towards that.
Thanks.
It's probably why you're doing well. Okay. So you already know, I cheated here, because you know my favorite song on the album now, because I already told you.
Yeah.
What's your favorite song on the album? If you have to listen to your own album again and again and again and again.
We're not talking about what to play live is my favorite, but what I like to listen to.
Oh, let's go either way. What song to you is the, you know, when you were making the album, you just said, yes, this is just, I can't believe I did this. This is great.
Blink of an Eye.
Blink of an Eye?
Yeah. Because it had the consciousness that I wanted the record to have, which was to almost like a rave consciousness,
mm-hmm.
that kind of ecstasy that you feel that takes you out of your mind. I want people to feel good. I want them to feel better
about themselves. Isn't that a good time? Isn't this a good time for that? It's kind of essential in these times to give something to people.
Yeah.
How much would you say your music, even today and yesterday, is a result of your environment? I mean, L.A. is definitely. I always joke that places that most of us don't live in America, you know. So you're putting out yet another record, but we're sitting here where we're sitting, right? And I always maintain this is not America. This is a pretty special place. You know, we're pretty blessed. I get to live where I live, and you get to live where you live. So. How much do you think?
Look at this. You gotta check this out.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at how gorgeous that is.
That's exactly. So, how much L.A.?
And you can be looking at that.
Absolutely. How much? I guess what here. I want to know is, whoops, that's where we pull the machine out. How much L.A.?
Pull on over so you can just look at that while we're.
Absolutely.
Before it leaves.
Cool stuff.
Isn't that cool?
How much L.A. is in you and your music?
When you said that, it made me think of, I did a duet with a guy named Andrew Eldritch in a band called Sisters of Mercy,
mm-hmm.
and I went to Germany to write with him before we did the duet for my record. And one night, as an insult, he said, you have no idea how American you are.
Uh-oh.
And he said it in a very insulting way, and he meant it in a very insulting way, and I reacted really defensively, and I am my own person, and that has nothing to do with America or anything else. But as I thought about it over the years, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopelessly American.
Well, but I don't know if that's, you know,
it's not a bad thing, but I'm very much a product of my environment.
Mm-hmm. But there's different products of the same environment.
Exactly.
I used to joke
different
around.
Different focuses of the same environment.
When I meet a 23-year-old kid that says dude every other word, I tell him that all you have to do to say what dude is really all about, if you use it that much, is take the E off the word and you've got dud. You know, which is a polite way of saying find some other words. There's a few others out there just for kicks.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also tell people that I can also be a great rapper because yo is just always spelled backwards. So you can use either one of those. Tough one, you can choose to go there or not. Tell me about the Billy Corgan song and the whole Michael Hutchence kind of tribute there.
I called Billy, I signed with Artist Direct, and we were going to release the record as an EP. But then Artist Direct came in the picture, offered a great deal, and they wanted a whole record. So instantly I needed four more songs for the record. So my husband said, why don't you just call your favorite writers in the world and write with them now? So I called Trent Reznor, Moby, Billy Corgan, somebody else, and Billy Corgan called back and said, I'm gonna be in town in 2 weeks. What are you doing? I said, well, really like to write with you. He said, send me some stuff. So I sent him a bunch of songs, and one of them was the song, Sacred and Profane. We'd already written it, but it was faster. It was more of a rock song. And he called me back and he said, I really like this song, but I'd really like to sit down with you and try some new things with it. I really love the subject matter. I wrote a song, he said, about Michael Hutchence called Shame on the last record. So I really get it, and I'd like to sit down and work on it. So he came out, sat down with the guitar, slowed the whole thing down to this film noirish, wonderful, sexy, emotional feeling, way more emotional than I had written it to be, and it was better.
Excellent.
So we went that way.
Yeah, and it's a great piece.
Thank you.
This is another tough one, but it's kind of, I'll tell you something about else I'm working on, because I might want to get you involved in it if you want to someday, but it's a it's the other side of your life. It's the acting side, but I'll tell you about that afterwards.
Okay.
Why do you think so many immensely talented people, it's not an obsession, but it's a wonderment of mine, so many incredibly talented people, and you can use your own definition of talent. I mean, obviously everybody uses Kurt Cobain, but we have our own, everybody has their own theories, you know, there. But why do you think so many, you've been out there, you've done the rock and roll thing for a long, long time now, you're still doing it, I'm looking at you, you're alive, you're well, you're healthy, you've made it, you've made it through. Why do you think so many people who've made it that big just don't make it? That they choose to leave life, they choose to, you know, to give it up? Tough question.
Because there's a burnout factor that nobody around you tells you about or tries to help you with.
Mm-hmm.
The record companies work us as hard as they can, because when it's hot, it's hot, and when the money's coming, the money's coming, and they don't care that we're dying on the vine.
You're a product.
To them, we are.
Yeah.
And they don't care that Kurt Cobain's on drugs. They don't care that he's on heroin. Just get on that stage. We'll take whatever we need to take. We'll send any doctor we need to get him up and out of the chair or off the floor to get on stage or get to the record store to do the in-store or get in the studio. Whatever he does at night when he goes to sleep, we don't care. Just get him back to work. And it's a horrible reality, but we're kids. He was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a kid when I started too. I luckily had a family around me that took care of me and kept me from disintegrating. He didn't.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't. And without somebody to go, you're fucking up, or let's go get help and fuck the record company, we have to take care of you. The only way out is, the only quick escape, the only quick vacation for 15 minutes is heroin or cocaine or something that's going to be right there and I don't have to leave. I can just get high and then tomorrow morning go back on the merry-go-round.
Awfully, boy, what a desperate, but you know, it's evil, isn't it? I mean, I hate
it's
to say it.
It's not right.
Yeah,
but
I know.
That's what family's for, you know?
Yeah, yeah, not everybody's that. Not everybody's that lucky. Yeah, okay. No, it's tricky stuff. So, you're touring with Berlin now. You know, you're back touring,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting stuff, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like, whoa, you're smiling. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
You did House of Blues in Vegas recently, right?
No, that's coming up next week.
Is that
week.
Coming up? Well, that's next week.
Actually, this week. I'm behind myself. It's in 2 days.
Wow. So you, Chrissy Hynde, Martha Davis, I mean, so many 80s female icons are still out there.
You're still doing it. You're rocking. You're smiling, which is even better. Will you ever be too old to rock and roll?
I don't know yet. Maybe.
Think you'll wake up one morning and just say, ah, okay, enough. I mean, what? You wake up in the morning, you guys got a big smile there, so you're very driven in all of this.
Well, I still love it. But it's like jazz, you know? People grew up with jazz when it started, and it was new and young and beatnik and the hot thing. And then it was old. And then all those guys grew up and grew old, and they were still playing. And now it's the older music. And now rock and roll, we're seeing, well, is that going to be the older music now? Will people grow old with it?
Mm-hmm.
Like with the Stones? Or will it die out? I think it's going to grow old like jazz.
Isn't it wild though? And I mean, because you're not that much, you know, similar generation to me. Doesn't it freak you out that you listen to an oldie station now? And what's Santana's an oldie. You know, I mean, what used to be doo-wop or whatever. Now yeah. The things that are oldies. You're not. I mean, Berlin's not quite an oldie.
Doo-wop
yet.
Was old when I was born. I mean,
right.
You know,
right.
It was the 50s music, and I didn't. That wasn't my time, or yours either.
We're here in the zeros, though. Isn't that just wild?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird. I did a whole thing on my show of trying to figure out whether it's the tens, the zeros, you know, the 2000 ands. I have no idea what it is. Nobody's named a decade yet, so we're in trouble. So your new album is not going to be a product of any particular decade because nobody's named it yet.
The zeros?
I think the zeros is kind of, I like the zeros, but I don't think anybody's going to, I don't think as a marketing guy, I don't think that's going to get them really, you know, calling something a zero is not really.
I like the zeros.
I like the zeros too, but I don't know if anybody's going to buy it. I don't think I'm going to sell that one. I don't think it's going to happen. Where else have you lived other than California? Have you spent a lot of time other places that you're passionate about?
There's only two other places I've lived in my life, England and Minneapolis.
Love
and those
London.
Were both to make records.
Really?
Yeah.
I love London. I don't know if I'd like the winters anymore, but I would love to live in London.
Well, you live a pretty cold place in the winter.
San Francisco?
It's pretty much the same. Yeah.
Oh,
it's freezing.
Everybody says that. Not if you lived in New York first.
Well, you're right. You're right.
Not if you lived on the East Coast first.
But England's much like San Francisco.
Parts of it are.
Yeah.
Parts of it are. So, it's funny. I write these questions. So back in the first generation, you can answer this or not answer this, but I'm always intrigued by this. So back in the original Berlin, you're on a big label. Did you land up, because I've heard stories both ways, did you see the money that came with what was platinum and success and all of that? Did it make its way to you, or?
Oh God, no.
I'm waiting for somebody to say yes. I'm just waiting.
No, because in that time, we split it five ways. It was a band. So by the time, even if it's a lot of money, by the time five ways is split up, I make 3 to 5 times now more than I did when I had a number one record on the charts then.
Isn't that amazing?
I make 5 times more now.
Wow.
Because it's not a big, huge group.
It's not a conglomerate.
Committee.
Yeah. Right.
I run it now.
That's great. I'm just waiting for somebody to say they actually made the spoils of their success, but I guess that's just rock and roll, huh? Because, I mean, the perception would be...
Sting, somebody, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe.
Look at Sting. He, that accountant that screwed him out of $9 million and he didn't even notice it was gone.
I should be as a nice Jewish old man, I should be so lucky.
Seriously, that's serious money. Now, he probably did see it because he wrote all the songs mm-hmm. and they were in his name. So the band made the record royalties, but he made all the publishing.
Yeah.
That's real money.
And look how mainstream he's managed to go. He's really...
He's a great writer, though.
Oh, no. Believe me, I'm not denying his talent. My wife has every Sting album, and I love... You know, most of his stuff.
He's got some really good songs.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Favorite old Berlin song?
Metro.
Yeah, you and I both. Why?
That one holds up. It just, I don't know why. I really don't.
I'll tell you why I think. You want me to tell you why I think? Because I want to be in that place that song talks about.
Mm.
It just, I think great songs, of which there are very few. I mean, I like to pogo and jump up and down to a nice Ramones tune, you know, Beat on the Brat's wonderful. But the songs that really resonate, the songs that work, tell stories. And not only do they tell stories, but they paint pictures of things that you wouldn't have in your normal life, that you'd want to put yourself in that picture, or you'd have some sort of passionate response to it. And I think that song does it, you know? I think that's why.
Thank you.
So that's probably it. So you've told this a million times. We haven't told it to me, but I did a little bit of research. Tell me about, and then something you might or might not want to do in a little while, sex, the Muddy Waters connection, how it happened. I mean, that song.
How the song came about?
Yeah.
We finished all the songs, and it was extremely calculated. We wanted to get on K-Rock, which was a station out here that was playing alternative music, and that's where we wanted to be. We wanted to be on that station. And we said, okay, well, we don't have any songs about sex in the record, so let's write something. So John started playing around in the studio, and he started doing the Muddy Waters song, I'm a Man. And then he just started grooving on that, I'm a man, M-A-N. And then I started throwing in, I'm a bitch, I'm a slut, I'm a geisha, I'm a slave, I'm a blue movie. And that came out of my relationship. At the time was in a rut. We were having sex kind of the same way for a while, and trying to spice things up, I asked him if he would play some roles with me. So he tried those, a few of them, and then one day he said, look, Terry, look, I'm not a burglar, I'm not a pirate, I'm not some knight in the white horse, I'm just a guy. I like guy things, I like straight sex, I don't want to do anything weird, I'm just a man. So I wrote the lyric like that. He was the boring guy. Man, I'm a 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 man. And I was all kinds of different things. But I kept him the boring same old thing. Just to piss him off.
Creativity is good in everything. My wife would tell you that.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I think creativity is what keeps sex and everything else alive. If you can be funny, if you can be creative, if you can tell stories in anything, that's where you win. And I think that's the only way. Yeah. Especially with a 19-month-old child, let me tell you. No question about it. So here's an interesting segue, because we got ahead of ourselves. I always thought the story told in the Metro would make a great film. You want to make that movie? That wasn't what I was going to talk to you about, but...
No, it's so sad. It's funny you say you want to live in there, because it's such an agonizing story. John wrote it because his girlfriend was going to Europe for the first time, and he was terrified she'd meet some gorgeous Italian guy and forget him. So it was his fantasy of losing her.
Wow. I never would have guessed that. That's wild. When's the last time you watched Top Gun? One of my wife's favorite three films,
I've seen it maybe back when it came out.
Yeah.
I saw the scene that my song was going over, and then I saw the movie at the premiere, and that was the last time I saw it.
I think the most interesting thing about Take My Breath Away, if I can say, and I want to hear your take on it, is here's a song that was eminently commercial. I mean, really, really, you know, and it obviously, you know, was on the soundtrack, and that was great stuff. And yet, I think the great thing about Berlin, and it's going to be your success for the future, even with the new thing, is when you say Berlin, everybody says, cool. And even Take My Breath Away, as commercial as it is as a record, like, I could play that record on my show among some very, quote, hip things, and nobody would call me up and say, what's that piece of that you're playing? So was it intended to be that more commercial than the other stuff? Do you feel it is?
Was it intended to be? Well, Giorgio Moroder wrote it.
Right.
So it was, he was to us, he was God. You know, we were so thrilled to get one song to work with them on. That's all we could afford, was No More Words. And he was like Prince. I mean, when he came in, he was a sound, and he worked with Bowie and Blondie. And I mean, they became him, not the other way around. He surrounded them with his sound, and they sang the stuff, and he was, you know, Flashdance and Cat People and Donna Summer and man, I mean,
amazing
stuff.
We
were like, please work with us, please, God, please. And he was so expensive. So he was all about commercial at that point. He was doing all the hits for all of these people. That was the way he wrote.
So you had one and you're like, this is great.
We had...
You got one and that's just great.
We got him, yeah. I mean, that was so exciting for us. And he wrote, of course, the hit. I mean, not wrote, but he produced the hit.
Mm-hmm.
He just had it going on.
Yeah, it's a great production. The VU meter just stays right there. No question about it.
And did you notice how he stole that one little piece of the Blondie song and put it in No More Words? The little dripping sound.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in Call Me? It was in one of the songs he did for them.
Oh, I know what you're thinking of, yeah.
Which one was it?
I think it was Call Me.
He produced their song,
mm-hmm.
and then...
He produced Call Me, yeah.
And then stuck it at the beginning of our song. He said, hey, you just use it on a Blondie song. We don't want it. He said, it works.
an artist. You find it hard to believe how long ago that all was? We're sitting here now, and, you know, does it feel like it was that long ago?
No.
Was it feels like yesterday? Feels like...
I don't feel more than 20 years old myself. And
well, you don't act like
that.
It, so that's good. I mean, the key is never to act your age, obviously. I've learned that. I'll never act my age. Whatever that age is, it's just not worth it. So, I can't resist. I read that your parents ran a record store when you were young. Mm. So, that must have been just wild because you just had your mitts on all sorts of stuff. I mean, that you never would have.
Never. At 8 years old, you know.
Right.
That's when they first opened the store, I was 8, and this was in the 60s, so...
That's Jefferson Airplane,
The best stuff.
Yeah.
The best time, the best era, and I got it right when it came out, and I got to play it in the store, because I ran the cash register.
Uh-huh.
They let me take care of the money. So all day long, I just sit there, wait for somebody to buy a record, and play records, and listen to everything in the store.
Yeah, it's funny. I discovered it pretty much in a stranger way. My grandmother used to rent a downstairs apartment to hippies. She called them hippies at that time, and I had no idea they were really hippies until one day one of the couples moved out and they left two albums. They left Are You Experienced by the Jimi Hendrix, by Jimi Hendrix, and they left Serialistic Pillow by the Jefferson Airplane. And I was only 7 years old, and I started listening to those albums.
Grace Slick changed my life.
And that was probably the end of that for me, you know. And I was like, ooh, these came from the hippies. What is this music? And it wasn't until I really grew up to realize what I had in my hands there.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty wild stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what else have I got that's really... Just a couple of more. Again, kind of a conjured up one, but I imagine it happens all the time, and I know that you have an interesting opinion about this. What do you think about people who... kind of turn around and say, oh, Berlin, synth-driven, where are the real instruments? You know, the whole kind of, how do you describe it, kind of split between, you know, the live bands, and those that play those goddamn electronic synthesizer things with no real drum, where's the music, and all that. I'm trying to get you radical.
It's like when Dylan played electric guitar and did his first electric guitar record and people flipped out. They said, oh,
right.
That's not real music. That's not folk music. Dylan is it's blasphemy. He's not Dylan anymore. To me, the only reason I'm in music now is because electronic music gives me the opportunity to no longer just be bass, drums, guitars,
mm-hmm.
and keyboards. I'm over that. I'm over guitar solos. I've heard enough guitar solos in my life to never hear them again. Electronic music gives me the opportunity to never sound the same in any given night because my palette of colors is anything you could possibly hear. I can stick in a show. And that makes it endlessly interesting to me.
See, you did that so well because you didn't get defensive. No, because most people, oh, I don't care. I'm a synthesizer. see, that's great. So I don't know when this was actually discovered, but then I read and I was like, wow. Was the Pope Princess Leia thing, was that kept a secret? Did my buddy George keep that a secret for a long time? Or was that a known fact?
Well, it wasn't a secret really because I wasn't big until Berlin, so why tell anybody?
Right.
Why would George tell anybody? Now, Berlin's, you know, made a name and I've made a name, so it's an interesting story.
Right.
For him.
For him, exactly. Yeah, I know. Well, being up there, I've dealt with the man a bunch of times on various projects, and that's a whole nother...
That could have been me. That could have been my life.
So tell me about that.
Well, when I acted, he did auditions for Star Wars, and what that looked like was a big warehouse and three chairs, and he was in one, and this guy named Harrison Ford, who wasn't an actor, he was a carpenter working on George Lucas's house at the time. He was doing his kitchen, and George asked him to read with the actors because he said he could act. So he said, well, I need your help. So he wrote the script, and I came in, and these lines are like, R2-D2, grab the phaser. The Dark Knight is upon us. And I'm trying to say these lines.
And you're like, what is this?
And Harrison Ford's just as in the dark as I am. You know, we're just trying to put some emotion into this.
Weird
what
stuff.
What the fuck is this? Because nothing had been done like this, and we didn't know where he was going or what we were saying or why. So we did our best, and I remember seeing Mark Hamill at one of the later auditions because he kept bringing us back, and then we did a audition on tape, and then I saw Mark Hamill in the unemployment line, and I said, did you ever hear about that Star Wars thing? Did you ever get that? He said, no, I never got it. And months later I saw him in the movie.
Yeah, well, and of course, hiring as much talent as I do in the other end of my life, Mark Hamill these days is available for a radio spot for Scale. He's auditioned for me about 12 different times. So, you know, and we know about Carrie Fisher, for better or for worse. So I think you ended up on the right end of the, I think, I'm sorry, I don't
Again,
mean this in a bad way, but I think...
could have been richer. He gave him a point on that movie, you know. Every single one of those actors got a point in Star Wars.
Whoop-de-doo, and what are they doing right now? Carrie Fisher is a writer on the Academy, you know, an assistant writer on the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean...
But they must have made some serious money on
that
movie.
They made some serious money, but... life takes you different places for different reasons, and I suspect yours is, you know... So, the last official question, and then I want you to do a couple of goofy things with me if you're up for it. When VH1 or E or those guys do the... if they haven't already, which I hope they haven't, they do the Terry Nunn Behind the Music... Behind the Music, or the Terry Nunn True Hollywood Story. What deep, dark secrets am I going to learn about? With bread in your mouth, a perfect time.
What deep, dark secrets?
This is a joke. I'm saying this to be funny, by the way. But you know, you see the True Hollywood Stories, and it's like, okay, the truth about Terry Nunn was...
The truth? I liked S&M parties for a while.
Uh-oh.
That's a deep, dark secret. Matter of fact, some of the best ones are in San Francisco.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. San Francisco, well, it's also because of the scene in San Francisco and because of the gay population and because of everything else.
Yeah.
I'm appalled. I just don't know if I could sit at the table anymore. Oh my God, and no men ever watch porn, you know, right? It never, none of us do, it never happens.
Never.
Never, we don't, we are totally.
Especially not on the computer.
Never, never. Thank God, computers are fast.
Did
and
you
when
see the man show the other night when the guy says, it's a little weird to like be masturbating to the same machine that teaches my kid how to read.
Oh, God.
That is a little...
Okay, so, I've done something really silly, and if I can find it. And you can either say, sure, Dennis, I'll do this, or I won't. I showed it to somebody today, and they said, you're going to ask Terry Nunn to do this?
Uh-oh.
Wait, no. You'll either get a big laugh, or you'll say...
I have to leave in about 5 minutes.
Perfect. It'll take, and I do too.
So it's perfect timing, but let me see if I can find it, because it's gotten dark, of course. Okay. So I thought one of the funniest things, because I have a sense of humor and I'm a funny guy, supposedly. How much of that are you willing to read with me?
We're going to read it?
Well, you could sing it and I could just do it. I made it really funny and dumb. The last paragraph is the part that someone said, "Did you show your wife that?" And I said, "Yes, I did."
I think we should just do the choruses.
So where do you want to do it?
I think we should just say the choruses.
Okay, so where do you want to start? I'm a DJ?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, what I will do with this, I will then take the instrumental track and put it under it.
Okay. Which you're gonna kind of do it fashion.
Well, we can try.
Yeah.
I can very speed it. I've got a turntable.
Okay.
We can do it. Whenever you're ready.
Go ahead.
I'm a DJ.
I'm a goddess.
I'm a DJ.
I'm a virgin.
I'm a DJ.
I'm a blue movie.
I'm a DJ.
I'm a bitch.
I'm a... Uh-oh, I blew it. Uh-oh. Where'd you go? This will be even funnier. Oh, there you go. Well, I can splice it. See, this is what I wanted to do. I'm a DJ.
No, you're not.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I'm a little girl.
Yeah. Okay, let's do another one.
Okay.
I'm a menace.
Wait, no, we got to do And We Make Love Together.
Oh, that's right. And We Make Love Together. Okay, whenever you're ready. Okay. I'm a menace.
I'm a boy.
I'm a menace.
You are.
Yeah, I know.
I'm a one-night stand.
I'm a menace.
You're a slut.
I'm a man.
You're a slave.
I'm a man.
I'm your little girl.
When we make love together. Pretty good, huh? I'm purposely singing badly. All right, let's do the last. Let's do the last part.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, right?
Hmm?
I'm a DJ.
Wait. Am I a teaser? Yeah, hold up like that.
Okay.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay.
I'm a DJ.
I'm a teaser.
I'm a DJ.
You're a virgin.
I'm married.
I'm a one-night stand.
I have a kid.
I'm your drug.
I live in San Francisco.
You're a slave.
I could fly down once in a while.
You're a dream divine.
And we make love together.
And let's do the last one. Go.
And we make love together. Okay, I want you to do one more thing for me. I know it's silly, but I will send you a copy of it and it will be funny before it's all over.
Okay.
Okay. Or not. Three IDs for the show.
Okay.
And the light here is so good.
I know. Yes, mm-hmm. Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to The Menace's Attic on 90.3 KUSF. Terry Nunn from Berlin, and 20 years later, it's time to admit our song Sex is all about. Okay. Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and 20 years later, it's time to admit that our song Sex is all about Dennis the Menace. And I know you believe that. Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Dennis the Menace, and he's a sexy babe on 90.3 KUSF.
There you go. So I have to talk to the record company, and we do have to do something about that DNA thing to promote the living daylights out of it.
Oh, great.
We have to. Oh, no, we have to.